Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. As the song goes, April showers bring May flowers. The question some home gardeners may have as April approaches is, are we running a little behind because of this on-again, off-again early spring season? I'm Don Marsh. We'll begin with that question as we talk about getting ready for those flower and vegetable gardens and lawn and shrub care. Get your questions ready to call us at 382-8255, email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org, or send us a tweet at STL on Air. Joining me in studio are two of the top horticulturalists from the Missouri Botanical Garden. June Hudson is consultant and designer at the garden's Kemper Center for Home Gardening. Also with us is her fellow garden horticulturalist, Dana Rizzo. Thank you, ladies, so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
June, let me start with you.
Okay.
Are we running a little bit behind because of this funky weather?
Well, you know, maybe just a little, but it's been so erratic that the plants somehow know that, you know, they kind of shut down when it gets real cold again and pick right up again once it gets warm again. So if we're a little bit behind, it's a little bit. Otherwise, you know, nature knows what to do.
Well, the daffodils certainly seem to know what to do, Dana, because I've seen a lot of them in Forest Park and some forsythia beginning to venture forth. So I guess we're okay.
Yeah, I think so. Once the forsythia started, I'm seeing them push out everywhere now. So I think we're on our way.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. It's not as bad as last year. Last year we had that awfully, awfully cold winter. Let me begin with some advice, if I can, for our home gardeners. A lot of people doing it for the first time. A lot of people have done it often in the past and may not know exactly what they're doing. What's the best advice, June, you can give to the home gardener at this particular point?
You know, the best advice, I never thought I'd say this, but it's just where we are today, is the best advice I can give a beginning home gardener is to get online and put in whatever they want to know, and you get 18 places to look up the answer. And, you know, it's really so easy now that even I, preceded by a long shot, but it's so succinct and really you can look up about anything you want. So I'd say, you know, quick answer, that's what you should do.
Yeah. And Dana, with regard to making choices, what should the first-time gardener or one who's not had a lot of experience be thinking about? Should it be flowers or should it be vegetables or does it make any difference?
I don't think it makes any difference. It depends on the homeowner or what your interest is or what you want to see. If you're wanting vegetables, if you're interested in canning and pursuing your home growing your own food, then vegetables. But you can integrate both of them into your garden, so why choose? How about planting both at this time? There's a lot to do or a lot out there that can be done at this time.
Are you saying plant them separately or plant them together?
Plant them together. Play around. Have a good time.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. We're in a new era. We need to think about them as part of the whole garden and not, you know, straight rows. You don't necessarily have to have straight rows of vegetables.
Thank you.
Make them look good in your flower garden or make your vegetable look good by incorporating some flowers with it. And that's what we're going to do at the Kemper Center is integrate both because people have limited space. So you don't need to decide between one or the other. You can do both.
But it would seem to me that there could be potential problems here because certain types of plants need a little more sun perhaps, or a little less sun, a little more water, a little less water. So how does that work into the equation?
Well, you have to make sure that culturally everybody's going to get along. That's the first thing. But you do that with flowers anyway.
You do.
Or vegetables. So
that
you
goes
really,
hand in hand.
It's the same, you know. And a lot of vegetables need full sun. That's true. But then there's a lot of flowers that also do. So if you combine them together, and things like lettuce can go in the shade. Even broccoli can stand a lot of shade. So you can integrate some shade plants with vegetables as well. It really is.
Dana, is there any kind of formula that people should know about with regard to determining if these various plants will get along?
A formula?
I wouldn't know if my squash is going to get along with my petunias.
Don't be afraid to try it, though. Don't restrict yourself. Having a good time in the garden is the best approach, feeling that it doesn't matter if you make a mistake. Chalk it off for learning experience and start again. That's why mingling things together somebody may not care for a way your tomato plant looks, so they're going to plant some daisies along with it. But trial and error, trial and error.
You're the adventuresome type. I can tell.
Yes, she is.
I just think you need to enjoy it. That's the what I would like to stress the most. Enjoy gardening. Enjoy it.
What about site selection?
Sites. Well, that goes sun. Of course, I wouldn't be planting my daisies in the shade. So a little research, like June mentioned. Let's figure this out. You do need to read the back of the seed packet. Basically, if you have an entrance, that's going to take you a long way. Make sure the soil is comparable, is amended. You've got maybe perhaps do a soil test before you start planting. But if not, if you just want to get out there and do it, till it up. If you have a shovel, you don't need a tiller, just get to work.
Anything to add to that? With regard to the soil, now that's where you come in over at the garden, don't you?
Well, it's true. And we need to make sure that the soil is friable and not completely all clay. You need to add compost and make sure that the roots can penetrate. That's basic gardening. But it goes for vegetables as well as flowers. So what goes for one really goes for another. And so if you work your soil either in the fall or early spring, as soon as it's not so wet that you're making it worse rather than better, and add some compost to it, you're off and running for most things that you want to plant in St. Louis.
I'm hopeful we get a lot of audience participation in in this discussion. I'm sure you will. We already have a call from Danielle, so let's bring Danielle into this discussion. She's calling from St. Louis. Go ahead.
Hi. I've been gardening for several years, and I have really good luck with my root vegetables. I can grow cherry tomatoes very well, but I was wondering if there's something in my with my soil that I could add to help with things. I don't have any luck at all with spinach or with the larger tomatoes. I can grow the tomato plants, but they'll put some flowers on, but they just really don't fruit like the cherry tomatoes will. I get maybe one or two fruits from five plants.
Do you have your tomato plants in full sun?
I do.
Okay. Well, then, you know, tomato plants are very heavy feeders. So you can use any balanced fertilizer to help your tomatoes, but don't overlook the fact that they want more food than most of your other plants. Now, the spinach, I'm confused about. That's an early spring crop. And if you can grow other root vegetables, I don't know why you wouldn't be able to grow spinach. But spinach can actually take a good bit of shade. So you might want to, is it full sun for spinach too?
That's in a little bit of a shadier spot, at least this year where I've sown it. But and I sowed it recently. It hasn't come up yet, but I'm hopeful this year.
Okay, don't let the soil dry out. That's one thing I must say about, you know, little plants. You think that there's enough rain, but that top layer of the soil dries out so quick. You need to make sure it just doesn't dry out for the spinach.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Thank you so much for the call. So it's not too early to have things in the ground right now, vegetables in the ground.
Well, it's not tomatoes. It's still way too early for tomatoes. But for root crops, there are carrots, rutabaga, turnips, beets, radish, all those can go in the ground. In fact, they should go in now.
Dan, how about the flowers?
Well, depends on what the pansies, yeah. I'm thinking outside the box other than the pansies. Most of us are putting things in the fall, more our fall or plants that we put in the fall and that we're pushing up right now. But as far your Mertensias, your Virginia bluebells, your woodland poppies should be popping up. I'm more of a perennial girl that way, not more of a spring annual. I wouldn't hesitate to throw seed out, though. Scratch that soil, throw it out, cover it up. Especially if it's a summer bloomer, you never know. We're going to get into some warm nights. If anything, they're going to hold dormant for a little bit. Like June mentioned, keep your soil moist. You'd be surprised what pops up.
Well, as I say, I've seen the daffodils, and they look very, very strong and robust. I was really surprised to see them after what we've been through.
Yeah, they're pretty tough. You know, they're under the ground about 6 or 8 inches, so they're kind of oblivious to what's going on above because the ambient temperature below is, you know, fairly stable, especially if we have snow cover. But of all the bulbs, the daffodils really, you know, behave themselves. It's got to take a lot to push to get, you know, to not have good daffodils.
Let's take another call. Fred's joining us from Glendale. Fred, go ahead.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Boy, have I got daffodils.
Great.
Beautiful yellow. But my question is, can I plant one tomato plant in a big pot that gets full sun? Would that plant grow by itself and maybe produce some tomatoes that the squirrels wouldn't eat?
Well, of course, yeah. Container gardening is really it's a trend that's really popular, and that includes vegetables, of course. So just make sure if you use a soilless mix, which is the best thing to do for any plant in a container, that you do add fertilizer to it because, again, they're heavy feeders. And even though it might say there's fertilizer in your soilless mix, that tomato's going to use that up fairly quickly.
You may reconsider
using Osmocote, which is a temperature-related fertilizer, to keep a steady supply of it during the growing season.
Did you say Osma?
Osmocote, O-S-M-O-C-O-T-E.
C-O-T-E.
Oh, yeah.
Fertilizer, Osmocote.
Yeah.
But one tomato plant will work.
Oh, sure. Yeah, for one pot, you know, I don't know how big your pot is.
It's a pretty good-sized pot. Yeah, that's why I thought about, boy, I could, you know, I've had luck with tomatoes in the backyard, but the squirrels eat them all, so I quit planting them. But I thought, you know, I could do something with this pot.
Well, quite frankly, that squirrel, if you don't protect the tomato in that pot, he knows how to climb up that pot.
No. I mean, oh boy, do they know stuff.
Okay.
Smarter than I am.
Okay.
But no, I would put some chicken wire around it.
I see. Okay. Well, you know what to do.
Okay. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Fred, thank you for the call. Well, what about those plants in the tomato plants in the garden? How do you protect them from the squirrels and anything else out there that's hungry for them?
Well, we have a fence around our tomato area. Really, when you get down to it, the thing that protects plants from animals is a fence.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much else that's totally effective, you know, or you have to net them, but you have to make sure they can't get in because once they're in, they can't get out. And that's a hysterical squirrel is not a friendly kind of thing to observe. So... Yeah.
Dana, no cayenne pepper or anything like that? You hear some of those
You can
home
try
remedies.
Anything you want if you're, again, try it. If it works for you, what we find is it may work for someone. It doesn't necessarily work for the next person. The fencing is the best thing. I would not recommend netting because they can get trapped, birds get trapped, and squirrels have a way of getting in no matter what.
And they are very smart. Where there's a will, there's a way with a squirrel. Well, that's what we're talking about today, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about your home garden, whether you're growing vegetables or flowers or both, your concerns about shrubs or lawn care. This is the place to call. 382-8255 is the number. As I talk with horticulturalists June Hudson and Dana Rizzo from the Missouri Botanical Garden. Back to continue this conversation in just a moment. We want you to be a part of it, so give us that call. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with horticulturalists June Hudson and Dana Rizzo from the Missouri Botanical Garden. I have a couple of tweets and emails here. Let's get to those, then back to the phones. One writer says, I have a hedgerow that gets out of control every year. How far can I trim it without killing it off altogether? Do you know, Dana?
Depends what it is. So we need a little more information there. Usually rule of thumb is a third of it can go. Take out the old wood. If you're not sure, find the old wood, get rid of the old wood, and cut to what, and ask yourself why you're pruning this shrub. If it's to increase flowering or if it's in the pathway, shaping it gingerly. Again, deadwood it, get rid of the deadwood.
The most important thing is what you said first, though. You need to know what it is because that's really the issue. You know, it's a lot easier to tell you what to do if we know what plant that we're dealing with.
And what about the time of year to do that? Is this the time of year? Is it the fall?
Depends. It depends on when that particular plant blooms. If it blooms in the spring and you prune it now, you're going to not have your flowers. So if that's the case, you want to wait till after it blooms and then prune it. But if it blooms later in the summer, that means it blooms on new wood, so you can cut it back so the new growth will bear the flowers later on.
Is that a general rule of thumb for all pruning?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Back to the phones. Chris joins us from the Shaw neighborhood, a very pretty neighborhood indeed. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had some plumbing work, some major excavation done last fall, too late to plant or to plant any grass. And I'm wondering, I have a north-facing, I'm on the south side of the street, a north-facing home. We don't get an awful lot of sunshine, but I'm wondering when it will be safe to sod.
Oh, well, anytime you pick up the phone and order it from now on out is a good time to put down sod. What it really appreciates, of course, is a steady supply of moisture to get it attached to the ground that you're putting it on. But as long as the sod growers can get their trucks into their fields to get the sod, you're good to go, and this is an excellent time to start that project.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We have an email here from Amy who asks, I have milkweed seeds. I want to grow them for monarch butterflies. Any planting tips, soil enrichment, location? Dana?
Milkweed. Again, figuring out what kind of milkweed. If it is tuberosa, which probably it is, it doesn't require much. I have a hard time myself growing milkweed because my gardens are too rich. And the most barren area that you have, scratch the soil, throw them in, and let it go. Ignored is the best for that particular plant. Once it gets germinated, again, you need to add the moisture, but once it gets established, and there's many species of the Asclepias, so she needs to figure out which species she has.
And we want to encourage people to do that, don't we,
We do. We do. We want to encourage that. The monarchs seem to be in peril, and we certainly, it's a nationwide push to save them or encourage them. And it's a many problem thing that they're perishing, but it's really nice to be able to plant the milkweeds. The lack of farmland that keeps the weeds in the beds, in the fields, is one of the greatest problems because they simply are looking for food and they can't find it. So if we supplement that in our gardens, we're taking the place of that problem.
Do they feed exclusively on milkweed?
No. They pollinate lots of flowers. They feed on lots of flowers. But milkweed is their favorite. It's like, I like fried chicken, so they like milkweed.
But let me just digress for a moment here.
Sure.
We talked off the air about bees. Last time you were here, one of your colleagues was your bee expert over at the garden.
Mm-hmm.
What is the status of the colony bee collapse right now? Is the situation improving?
It is improving because of education and research and how to overcome the problems that are causing this problem. They're still not completely sure of the whole picture. There's a lot of parts in the picture that contribute to this problem, and the longer we go on and other people are looking at how to solve these problems, we'll overcome them. But beehives are complicated places, and humans are doing the best they can to overcome these problems. And I think the future probably is bright, but one thing we have to remember is the honeybees are not a native bee, and they come from Europe. And so we need to encourage the native bees because they're an important part of this whole bee picture and pollination. So if you have an opportunity to do research to see what kind of habitat they like rather than the hive, the honeybee hive, and encourage that in your backyard, you'll have a wider variety of bees that aren't so susceptible to all these problems.
We can't discount the significance of this issue of the loss of the bees.
No, we cannot. Too many crops are dependent on being pollinated by bees.
Right. Back to the phones. Nicole joins us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Nicole. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about rats taking over my garden. They have figured out that they had a steady source of food due to my chicken coop, and now I can't seem to get rid of them, and I'm wondering what I can do to get rid of them without poisoning them because I'm worried that they would, go and die in their dens and then subsequently poison my soil. Do you have any tips about that?
Well, boy, that's a tough one. Are they digging their holes around your vegetable garden, or how do you know you had them?
I know that I have them because we've seen them, and we've found, when we first found one entrance hole, we capped it off, and four more have popped up, and we've seen many more rats since.
What you need to do is call an exterminator, and they can apply, sounds ghastly, literally, but they apply a gas to the holes. It's not a poison that's going to remain in your soil, but it will eliminate the rats.
It wouldn't hurt my hens or the soil.
Pardon me?
It wouldn't hurt my hens or the soil?
Well, no, you can't put it where your hens are. No.
Okay.
No, that's not going to work. No.
They may have to be rehomed. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Chicken-free homes for the gas, but that would be the more succinct way and the more successful way of getting rid of the rats rather than adding poison. You can't add poison to the soil at all.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to.
No, you cannot.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you for the tip.
Thanks for the call. Hope it helps. An email from Scott. Is it too late to put down crabgrass preventer?
Not at all. Not at all. This is the time of year. What's the rule of thumb? When the forsythias bloom, it's time to treat crabgrass.
That's true, yes. The thing to remember about that is that once you put down a crabgrass preventer, you've eliminated the possibility of sowing overseeding grass or putting grass seed down, because it will kill the new seedlings as well. So you're going to have to wait quite a bit of time, maybe till fall, to do more seeding. Mm. But the crabgrass preventer is great for right now.
Well, maybe this is a good time to talk about fertilizers, which we've mentioned a couple of times, herbicides, and what else do I have? Insecticides. Do we have any rules of thumb about that? What advice, the best advice you can give about any of these things? Dana, you're not shrinking away, are you?
I'm just real cautious on all of that. I deal with a lot of customers, and I'm back to the basics when it comes to our lawn. I will use a fertilizer late spring, right, to give my lawn an extra push. But when it comes to the weeds, I'm out there with a hand tool, depending on the size of your lawn. But rule of thumb, if you've got a nice lawn, minimal weeds, get out there with a hard rake, hire somebody, thatch it, aerate it, water it, reseed if you like. It's basics. Don't overthink the yard process. It's a seed. It'll grow. We've got sunlight, rain, it wants.
How about insecticides, Jim?
Well, insecticides, you know, you have to have a problem before you have a cure. So you got to identify what the problem might be and then act accordingly. But a lot of insecticides can be controlled. I mean, a lot of insects can be controlled with safer insecticides. They go in categories. And if you start with the safest one, and you can read that on the back of the label at any store that sells them. And if you start with a mild one, you can control a whole lot of insects like that and not work your way up to the top right away. Because if that fails and you get a resistant population, you've got nothing. So you want to start at the bottom if you're going to do any insecticides at all.
Dana, how often and how should you be inspecting plants to see if you've got any of these things?
Perennials or the lawn?
Perennials. I'm thinking basically of the flowers here.
Based on the year previous, or you didn't have a successful year prior, you may want to think, what's going on? So then you go out, do I see any evidence of chewing? Do I have any frass, which is insect waste? The blooms on my perennials are being munched away either by rabbits, but depending if you're seeing a problem, you've planted well and you're not having the success that you're wanting, then it's starting, hey, I need to figure something out. Something's not blooming. Something's not growing.
Discoloration a key?
Yes, it is. You know, plants are like your family. You know, if you have kids and they wake up and they don't look right, you know there's something wrong with them. Plants are like that. If you get to know the plants in your garden, you can tell when something's not right. So first defense is observation, like Dana said. And once you find that the plant isn't looking right, and discoloration sometimes can be mites or similar thrips. They all, you know, they make the plant look whitish. Lace bugs on azaleas, they make the plant look whitish. So then you know you got a problem, but it's observation.
have a question here, an email from Marie, which is a question we get every year. A lot of people are in this situation. She lives in a condo and have a small patio space. What are some ideas for growing plants in pots?
Okay. That's an endless. I mean, small trees, raspberries, perennials, some perennials, more annuals. My preference would be annuals, but you can beautiful, again, small canopy trees. We have several trees in containers at the garden if she wants a little more ideas. But it's endless, really. I've seen pines, all kinds.
I would think that your exposure would make a big difference.
Absolutely.
Even northern, southern, east, west, that sort of thing.
Hostas and pots and in a shady corner are gorgeous because you view them up close. There's nothing more dramatic than a big leaf hosta.
I guess this is another situation where people can go to you at the garden or go online to find out, you know, what plants are susceptible to certain exposures, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. We've got pots all over the Kemper Center, and we plagiarize all the time, so anybody else can do the same.
Okay, I want to go back to another question here. In early spring, this is from Madonna. In early spring, there are so many witch hazels blooming and perfuming the air at the Botanical Garden. I've tried so many times to grow them. I plant the bush in full sun, water it regularly, but by July it's always dead. Is there a variety I should focus on? Am I planting it at the correct time of year? And that's the witch hazels.
Okay, well, there's a zillion different kinds of witch hazels, and it may be just poor selection, you know, that is the cause. But the native Hamamelis, there's two. There's Virginiana and Vernalis. And look on the label, if they say either one of those species names, they're almost sure shot. And they like dappled shade in the summer. They don't like really hot sun. But other than that, they're really not that fussy. But any reputable nursery should have one or the others of those species mentioned. And Hamamelis mollis is one of the oldest ones around. It's not so native, but it's really a good one. So Vernalis, Virginiana, or mollis, those will succeed.
That's something we've talked about, too, in the past, and that is finding plants that are really indigenous to this part of the country. Mm-hmm. You just can't throw anything in and assume it's going to grow.
Well, if you look at the zoned information, you find that it's within our zone, which is 6/5, that it should be okay. There's always a degree of chance with that, but the native plants, you know, they're used to our changing weather, and they're just acclimated more readily than other plants.
With this in mind, let me go to this email from Alex. Says, I have so much bamboo growing in my backyard, not indigenous to this part of the world, I don't believe. I don't know how it got there, and it's nice because it acts as sort of a privacy fence, but I didn't think this area had the right conditions to grow bamboo. Is it unusual? Dana?
Oh, actually, I don't know. June?
Oh, gosh, there's a native bamboo that's, you know, it's as invasive as any others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bamboo is very invasive. And once you plant it, look out. You're not going to be your neighbor's best friend because it's going to move around. So what you have to do is be diligent. There's a lot of thought about barriers for bamboo, but I want to tell you that we at the garden have tried most of them, and you have to be, you know, you must go down like about 20 feet because they're going to find their way across it.
Hmm.
Over it or under it. So you have to be very diligent about the control if you plant it at all. And when a comb comes up, you cut it off, you spray it with a herbicide. Comb comes up out of the place that you want it, and you have to do this for the rest of your life. Yeah, or move. Move's a good idea.
Uh-huh. All right. Good advice. That's a tough one. Let's go to Phil. He's calling us from Baldwin. Phil, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I know bamboo. I'm when I was a contractor, one of the new homeowners wanted me to dig up the bamboo. I told him, you got to dig down 15 feet to get that stuff. Anyway, I'm calling about tulip bulbs. I have some tulip bulbs that have migrated from their spot in the flower bed out into the zarya grass. It's only about 6 to 10 inches, and I don't want to dig it up now because I don't want to mess up the grass. And I want to know when is the best time to dig up the bulbs, because I can't figure out how they make themselves back into bulbs. I just can't figure it out, because it seems like the growing season is just starting and they're already dead. You know, they're already gone. Also, I have some bulbs I planted last fall, and they have not come up. Only about half of them have come up. All the white, half the red, and only one blue or one purple. So I'll listen on the phone and point to your recommendations. Thank you.
Okay, I've never heard of a migrating bulb.
Well, I'm thinking it's a squirrel. It depends how many bulbs you're seeing in the front of the yard.
I think you're right.
I think it's a squirrel that's digging them up and then just let them go. I think it's a nice effect. And then when it's done blooming, if you don't want it in there, just pull it out.
Or mow it down with the grass. It'll be gone.
Yeah.
No, I want it. I want to keep it.
Oh, well, okay. Well, just let it go. But as far as, now you said you planted some bulbs late fall.
Yeah, these are newer bulbs, yeah.
But
ones that migrated, it probably was a squirrel, because where they're supposed to be, the squirrels dug them up last fall.
Mm-hmm.
Some dug them up, and so they're not there. They're in the grass. I don't know how they got. I don't know if he reburied them or something.
Yeah, they rebury them, just like they do their other food. Their nuts.
Their acorns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if the other bulbs aren't pushing out, either you planted them too late, or probably not this year. But were they subject to freeze?
I kept them covered with about 6 inches of leaves plus a weed barrier, but it wasn't. It's not solid. It allows the water to go through. Mm. So to keep the leaves from blowing away, you know, I kind of made like a sleeping bag out of this weed barrier, and that way, you know, allows water through. I actually folded it in half. If I could have sewn it together, I would have, but I had to place bricks on either edge of the barrier so that wouldn't blow off, and they were protected. They are on the northwest side of the house, so close to the house. So
Phil, we've got to take a break. Let's get a response to your question. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Well, what do you say to Phil?
Yeah, we were conversing. I think maybe there was too much moisture. Tulips need really well drained soil, and if they get too much moisture, they're susceptible to rot. And I'll bet that they rotted away. And when you plant them late, they have fewer roots. So if those roots get rotted, they got pretty much nothing. Yeah. I'd try it again next year.
All right. Phil, thank you for the call. I have to take another break now. We're talking to horticulturalists June Hudson and Dana Rizzo from the Missouri Botanical Garden, answering your garden questions. Back to do so in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Okay, we are back with June Hudson and Dana Rizzo from the Missouri Botanical Garden. We're talking gardens as the spring season is upon us, so they tell us. It feels like it today.
Yes, it does.
Not so much yesterday over the weekend. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Mallory calling from St. Louis. Mallory, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you guys, in my backyard, we've got a lot of shade, and the erosion has just gone crazy the past couple of years. And I wondered if there's any particular plant you'd recommend for maybe some ground cover that also works as an erosion barrier.
Ooh, a lot of the ground cover now is becoming invasive, so we're staying clear. There is the Hypericum. What species is that, June?
Calycinum.
Calycinum, that's a real good. May not get the bloom, but can handle some shade. Did you say deep shade or?
I wouldn't call it deep shade. I mean, there's a lot of shade there. It's just it's really hard to mow because of the slope that the erosion has created. So I'd like it to have something I could set and forget.
You might be able to plant some shallow rooted maples.
Yes.
Maples are good.
Uh-huh.
Some of the Japanese maples that can tolerate the shade, that I think that's pretty.
Another plant that you might try is Rhus, Grolo, and it's a woody plant, but it grows by suckers, and it's used a lot for erosion. So once you get that started, Your erosion probably is a thing of the past. However, it's a matter of financing because you need to plant it, you know, fairly close so you get a quicker cover because the area between the plants is still susceptible to erosion. So you're going to have to modify that and take care of the erosion until that kicks in.
How about ivy?
Ivy too. Yeah, that's okay. It's invasive. You know, it's going to go where you probably don't want it, but
it's still popular, but
yeah.
But it's becoming invasive, the English.
Well, that's almost a benefit, isn't it? If you had an erosion problem, it'll move quickly to help solve the problem quickly.
Yeah, it is. But I think people who have erosion problems need to just remember that until it really takes over, you are still going to have some erosion unless you plant it really tight.
Back to the phones and staying with the lawn situation. Larry in Normandy has a question. Go ahead, Larry.
Hi, yeah. We live, actually, the lawn backs to a golf course, and we have a severe problem with molds in the lawn. And aside from buying a carload of those spring-loaded traps that snap down, is there anything else I can do to control them?
We get that question every year, June.
Yeah, that's true. There's a newer product on the market. I'm not quite sure the name. I think it's Talprid. I'm not sure the spelling, but it's like worms. It tastes and doesn't taste like a worm, but it looks like a worm. And moles just love them, and you put it in the ground, and then the mole is no more. So you might investigate that. That's probably the latest and the greatest on the market for the control of moles.
If I may say so, I'd go over to the clubhouse at the golf course and ask them what they do, because that's the problem that golf courses have, and they're fairly effective in dealing with it. I've seen their traps, so maybe they could help you out.
Well, I walk on the golf course, and I can tell you they don't do a very good job of controlling them there.
Well, you know what they say about golf courses? It's a good walk spoiled. Someone has said so. So be careful when you're out there. Thanks for the call. Hope it's been helpful.
Bye.
We have an email here from James. Says, I have some hyacinth and crocus bulbs that I never got around to planting last fall. They've been stored in a cold garage all winter. They are still firm, seem healthy. I don't expect they would bloom this year if I plant them. But if I do plant them now, will they have foliage this year and possibly bloom next spring? I'm concerned if I try to hold them for a year that they're going to rot. What do you think, Dana?
I say put them in, of course, and you will probably have some foliage. You probably won't get the bloom. Depends how cold your garage was, and if it had that dormancy required, you might get a bloom. But absolutely put them in to prevent from losing them altogether.
Okay, hope that helps. Susanna will join us now on the phone. She's calling from St. Louis. Susanna, go ahead.
Thank you for having me. My question is, we have two big pin oaks in our front yard, and I wonder if there's anything that we can do to keep all the acorns from germinating. Last year, we dug up thousands of baby oak trees.
No, I don't think so. I mean, there could be something, but I probably wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, putting anything down on your pin oaks is really, you know, any kind of a herbicide is such a bad idea that we really can't recommend that, honestly. It would be too harmful for the tree to try to kill the little seedlings. It's, you know, if you need to think out world problems, you just sit on the ground and start pulling those little seedlings out. That's not a very good answer.
All the world problems with the amount of acorns we have.
Oh, good
okay,
grief.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm having a brain freeze right now, and I know what these things are very well because I've been fighting them for years. The little round balls with spikes on them.
No, sweet gums?
Sweet gums. That's exactly
yes.
It. Is there any value that they have? I mean, you can rake them up and get them, have them by the bushel. Can you use them as mulch or anything? Or how do you, June, you're ready to go.
Yeah. You can put them under hostas because slugs hate them. They don't like to be poked when they crawl over the ground.
Who doesn't hate them?
Craft people make all kinds of wonderful things. So, you know, whatever. But, yeah, putting them under hostas where they don't show, and that will keep some of the slugs away from your hostas.
So there is a practical use for these things.
Pretty much that's it.
we're making news here today. That is great because I know so many people who have them, and everybody literally curses them for just being such a nuisance. Okay. I've vented on that. Let's get back to the phones and bring in Ken calling from St. Louis. Ken, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning or good afternoon. My question and comment is I have a really great peach tree that just has some beautiful peaches on there. However, I was in Aspen a couple of years ago, or actually last year, and they had a freeze, and they ended up with really huge succulent peaches. And what she said that they're going to start doing is, you know, prematurely trimming the peach trees to get bigger peaches. So I did some trimming in January when the branches were still dormant, which is a good time to trim your peach tree. But I'm getting a lot of growth on there now, a lot of, you know, pre-flowers and stuff. So what I'm wondering is that I still have some areas where they're really dense. Is there a good way to, I mean, is it a good time to still trim that or to trim those branches?
Are you talking about one tree?
One tree, yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you had an orchard, that'd be pretty impractical. But you can go eliminate some of the flowers on several of the branches. Then that will put all the energy into the one or two flowers that you leave. And then those peaches will be bigger because all the energy is going into less flowers.
So do you just pinch those off?
You pinch the flowers off. Yeah, just leave a few. Don't pinch them all off. But,
Sure.
But just don't have as many flowers develop fruit, and the resulting fruit will be bigger.
Great idea. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Well, I'm going back to the sweet gum tree here now because we have an email from Carol. She has six sweet gum trees in the yard. Like to know if there's something she can do to prevent the gumball besides spraying. That's very expensive, obviously. I've seen online that you can put copper nails in the base of the trunk or inject some kind of hormone in the base. Any ideas for Carol?
Wow, I'd tell her to call an arborist. I don't know about that. I really don't. It sounds like folklore to me. But, you know, stranger than fiction, things happen. So I really don't know about that. Some years ago, they developed a spray, and you had to put it on at an exact moment in the life cycle of the tree, and it would prevent the sweet gums from forming. But because it's so variable with winter and such, it was so hard to pin down when that time was. And if you missed it, you sprayed for nothing. So it's not a very popular technique anymore. It never really took off to any great degree. And I don't think anything's replaced that product. But boy, I'd call an arborist. There's a St. Louis Arborist Association has a list of really good arborists. They can answer that question.
I had heard years ago that if you drive a nail into a tree, that could likely kill the tree, though.
Well,
it disrupts the vascular system in the place where you put the nail, but you'd have to put nails all the way around the tree to keep all the vascular system from transporting water back and nutrients back and forth. One nail's not going to do it.
Okay. All righty, back to the phones, and we'll bring in Mary Ann calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Mary Ann.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have three quick questions. One, I was on vacation, so I didn't trim my roses. Prune, is it too late? Second is, does Monsanto really make milkweed seeds that are poisonous to monarchs? And the third one has to do, how do I get rid of this honeysuckle in my common ground?
Okay, what was the first question again?
Well, the first one was go ahead. You repeat it. It was Monsanto making milkweed plant seeds that are harmful to the butterflies?
No.
No, June, no. What is the Asclepias that blooms later that we are trying to avoid planting?
Yeah, there's a native Asclepias that it's Asclepias curassavica, and there's some concern about planting the annual because it blooms later, and the monarchs feed on that. They lay their eggs on it, the larva turns into butterflies too late for them to make the trip to Mexico. So we're not going to plant that. You have to plant the native milkweeds, and Asclepias curassavica is not that. But Monsanto has a program to support the monarch program, and they do not have poisonous seed. That was the second question.
The first question, is it too late to trim rose bushes?
No.
Dana?
No. You can go ahead and do it. I mean, gingerly, be careful. But no, I've been trimming them all week.
Okay. And the third
and what
question?
What about the wild honeysuckle?
Oh, well, the rule of thumb is if you have, is it a shrub, the shrub honeysuckle?
Oh, my backyard is basically wild. The way it goes down a hill, but it's suddenly just in the last few years just become totally covered with this honeysuckle all the way down. I've tried trimming it back when it's close to the yard, and it just comes back. How do I get rid of it?
Okay, what you do is, and what the people at the nature reserve, our nature reserve, would tell you is you have to just cut and spray. You can't wait hardly any time at all because you're creating an open wound that heals quickly when you cut it. And you have to put the herbicide in that open wound so that it gets transported down to the roots of the plant. So if you would look at perhaps Roundup, but do when you cut it low, and then when it comes back, it'll be very weakened. You cut it again, do the same thing, cut it again, do the same thing. Eventually you'll win, but it's a hard battle.
Well, I have a hillside of it. Is there any... I don't. Is there anything that I can do in a massive way?
Well, not really. Not really. You have to attack it on a really sensible basis. And no, you're not going to get it all at one time. You're going to have to work at this for quite some time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Our time is really getting away from us here, so I'll need real short answers to some of these email questions I'd like to get in. I noticed that my tulips are coming out of the ground. I can see the bulbs. Should I replant them? Dana?
Tulips are emerging out of the ground?
The tulip bulbs are coming out of the ground.
Oh, yikes. You can try, but if there's foliage attached, then maybe. But if they're emerged out of the ground with no foliage, then possibly you replant them, but you may not get a tulip. Flower.
All righty. Michael has this email. We lived for 25 years in Northern Virginia and enjoyed red-tipped photinias. Will they grow in St. Louis, June?
No. Mild winters, yes. Normal winters, no. They just are too tender for our climate for the most part.
Another question here. James writes, I have a lawn with a high water table. We have three mature trees with moss mold growing on them. Is that bad? Also, we would like to plant some pine trees. Would they do okay?
No, not with a high water table. The moss on the trees could be indicative of another problem, rotting. Call an arborist on that one.
Yeah, make sure that it's not rotting inside the tree to cause that problem.
The issue of watering is something I wanted to ask before, and we only have 1 minute left. With regard to going back to our gardens, vegetable or flower gardens, what about the issue of watering? How do you know when it's too much or too little?
It depends on your kind of soil. If you have really clay soil, it keeps it wet a lot longer than very friable soil. So water less if your soil is clay. If it's very friable, you probably have to water a little more because it's going to go through quicker. So you need to look at the soil and how dense it is.
Should you water to the point where you can actually see the water, a patina of water on the ground? I mean, does that mean you've done it just enough or too much, or is there any way to tell what is
enough? Normally don't want standing water, no. So, it just depends on the kind of soil you have. So soil test's the best idea.
Get down there and grab a handful of soil. Ball it up. If water's running out, you've overwatered. Don't be afraid to grab your soil and feel your soil. If it clumps together, stays in a nice dough ball, it's good. If it falls apart, you might need to water a little bit more.
And don't be afraid to call the folks at the Missouri Botanical Garden. Right. We'll put all the information, contact information, on our website at slpublicradio.org. They'll answer any questions you've got and test your soil for you as well. June Hudson, thank you so much for being with us once again. Dana Rizzo, great to meet you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks.
And I hope you have a great season at the garden. I'm sure you will.
Thank you so much.
Right. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with CPA Lance Weiss about the fast-approaching filing deadline for state and federal tax returns. See, something else happens in April. It's not only flowers and asparagus growing. It's the tax man cometh. Send your tax questions to talk@stlpublicradio.org, and Lance Weiss will answer them. Archived version of the program available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/STL on air. It's a production of St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Don Marsh. Thanks for listening.